Not ready? Too bad. Head back, face forward, and hold on like you mean it.
Welcome to Review Time's Theme Park Cast. This is a weekly show where we discuss the ins and outs of attractions and theme parks from around the world. Today we're exploring possibly one of the most famous Disney theme parks in the world. It's the Magic Kingdom at Walt Disney World. A lot of people have gone here, a lot of people have spent money here, but has Review Time Theme Park Cast done an episode on it? Well, I sure hope not, because otherwise we'd feel very silly. But before we get into the show, we have to introduce the man who mentions that you should never mention the initials of Monsters, Inc. Laugh Floor in front of children. It's Review Time's Theme Park Cast host, Luke Carroll.
Hey, yeah, I'm not even gonna point it out. You can figure it out for yourself. We don't want to get that explicit E if we say the word. You know, it's pretty raunchy out there.
We don't want to get kicked off Apple, because Apple, they're like, oh, on an explicit podcast, that ain't gonna fly.
That's not our thing. But this is fitting. Magic Kingdom next week celebrates its 50th birthday.
Yeah.
You can celebrate by buying an iridescent cupcake. That's about it.
Wonderful.
That's coming to the Magic Kingdom, but hey.
No, there's golden statues. There's a plaque that celebrates all of the cast members who were only laid off about a year ago. Did you see that?
Yeah. The 80%, I think, are back now. And then the other 20 were invited back, and they just kind of went, no.
I've heard from a lot of people, like, that if you were on the edge about your job, that the furlough was kind of like a blessing in disguise, because they're like, wow, I don't really want to do this anymore.
Well, I've also heard from the cast members who are like, ooh, I'm glad I'm now working 6 days a week to earn less money than I was on unemployment when I was furloughed.
Yeah. Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
But with the celebration, look, we've also got a couple of more exciting things. You do have the decorations around the park. You have the new show coming along. You have Tron Light Cycle.
A new cake castle?
We unfortunately don't.
Ah, damn. Do you like the new color of the castle? I need to see it in person.
I have heard that it complements Floridian weather. Like when it's really bright and sunny, it's really nice. But I also think that they pretty much just took the original castle and just turned up the saturation slider. For those that don't know, it's just like, it's very blue.
Well, it's blue and pink now, which is more what I would always think of as the Disneyland castle colors. Yeah. Where now Tokyo's kind of got the almost the more classic, you know, castle style from what the Magic Kingdom really looked like 50 years ago when it opened, the kind of more grayish blue. Well, now it pops a lot more, the new pink. That's definitely for sure.
Which I think is fine. Like, I don't have any issues with it. But basically what we're going to do with this voyage through the Magic Kingdom is we're going to do similar to what we've done to other theme parks. Like, we've done this before. We'll just go through each land. We'll talk about the attractions featured in each of them. And we'll talk about our personal experience at this park. Luke, this is the only theme park that we've talked about on the theme park cast that you've worked at.
It's the only theme park I've worked at. Well, technically, I've worked at all four of the Disney World parks, but it kind of did a little tricksy where I pick up like an extra shift just to say I've worked at all four Disney parks. So I've worked at all four for one day and then for like, you know, 300 days at the Magic Kingdom. So there's quite a separation between that. But yeah, so for a year I called the Magic Kingdom my home. Main Street USA was my homeland, but I was lucky enough to have a generic enough costume that I could go anywhere in the park wherever my job required. So that was a lot of fun. So yeah, I've probably spent thousands and thousands of hours in this park. So if there's a park I know like the back of my hand, it's this one.
Oh yeah. And like, to be fair, since we've gone, not much has changed. They're adding a new coaster, which is the Tron Light Cycle. Yeah, I don't believe that there is, except for Stitch. They've removed Stitch.
They've removed a ride, yeah. So I worked there in 2015. You were last there in 2019.
Yeah.
Nothing new. There's some new construction, obviously, but nothing new has been added. So we're still perfectly qualified to talk about how this park is at the moment. There's obviously less entertainment, less parades because of what they say is still the pandemic, but if you look at visitor numbers, they're still pretty high. So, and they've opened up some stuff at other parks. I don't see how you can have fireworks and say that that's fine and then not have parades when the same number of guests are spread throughout the entire parade route instead of just in front of the castle.
Well, because the fireworks are at night and COVID, yeah, it's 9 to 5
oh,
job.
Z, sleep time.
I have heard, though, that people prefer the randomness of the cavalcades that they do. For those that don't know, they got rid of the parades and replaced them with, like, basically just random characters and random parade floats coming through the day. I've heard people prefer that. There was one day where Merida came out on a horse and then the horse
got
absolutely got very scared.
It was a balloon, wasn't it? Like a balloon flew in front of it, got wrapped around its leg, and it just flipped. But the Merida is clearly a horse rider because she kind of just jumped off and just walked
Merida.
It off.
She just like did a backflip off the horse and was like, hell what? Yeah, and just walks backstage. Like, this ain't my problem.
See you guys.
But do we want to start in the traditional Disney sense? Well, actually, should we start at the TTC?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
Go all the way to the TTC.
Yeah, this park, from the beginning, and if you look back, this is a lot of Walt's original designs and stuff like that. Disney wanted to control everything about the Magic Kingdom experience. A lot of this comes down to Walt loved Disneyland, but hated what happened to it. He loved Disneyland, the park. As soon as you step that 1 foot outside the Disneyland Resort, which is a really small parcel of land because that's all they could get the money to buy, essentially. I'm no longer on Disney property. Well, here's these liquor stores and tacky convenience, stores and one-star hotels that God knows what lives in the bed sort of thing. Like that was the issue that Walt had from the start. So when they bought this 27,000 acres in Florida, one of the big things Walt wanted to do was completely control that. So that's why they have so much land. That's why, from any of the parks to get off property, you can't see anything off property from the park. And it's going to be a 5 to 10 minute drive till you can get to anything off property from most of them.
And well, you can't see anything that is not Disney. You can see stuff like the Contemporary but it's... I still find it at some points. There are times I'm in the Magic Kingdom and just in Tomorrowland, you can see in the distance Bay Lake Tower. And it's like, okay, neat.
Especially over by Space Mountain over there. You're like, oh, hey.
Yeah. Hello.
And that control, that wanting to control the guest experience is the big reason we have the TTC, which is the tomorrow. What an idiot. I was going to say the Tomorrowland Transportation Center, which I believe is the people mover. But no, the Transportation and Ticketing Center, which is essentially where you park your car and it's a way to separate you from your car, from your possession, the boringness of real life. And through one of Disney's approved transportation methods, you separate yourself from your life and go to the Magic Kingdom. Remember when this opened, there wasn't the bus loop that's out the front of the Magic Kingdom? So you were either staying on site at either the Polynesian or the Contemporary, or you drove and caught the monorail or the boat. That was it. That was your options to get to the park. So everyone had this experience of getting on a Disney-approved transportation method as the very first thing you do at the start of the day.
Yeah, and it does make it a very special experience. Mm. I've heard it considered to, like when you used to watch, well, when you watch any Disney movie, how at the start they have the reveal of the castle. Mm. That's kind of what I've heard it alluded to, especially in the older movies, how it was like the silhouette of the castle that was like, da-na-na-na-na. Yeah.
And that was always
sort
Walt's
of what it's like
design from it. If you look into it, like he wanted it phased as that picture. And it's a lot when you even get to the park. If you've never noticed, you'll notice when you get to the park, you're low. Being low means that even though the train station is nowhere near as tall as the castle, because you have to walk up to get through the train station, you can't see the castle. It's designed so that as you round the corner, you go under the train station to the left and the right, you see Main Street. Cool. Main Street's cool. It's got this nice theme, turn of the century. But it's only when you go a little further around that corner that the castle is revealed to you. And this is that you know, that grand reveal exactly like the start of a film.
And this is a big castle as well. This ain't your mum and dad's castle. This is Disney World's castle. Like, it is unfathomable how big it is until you actually go there. And even when you're there, there are times where, like, you're in the park and you look over and you're like, oh, yes, that's
there. There's a castle.
I would say gigantic.
I haven't seen Shanghai or Paris in person, but I would say the Cinderella Castle and the Paris Sleeping Beauty Castle are probably the top two Disney castles.
Yeah, I've seen, like, I haven't been to Shanghai either. I've seen pictures of it, and I've seen that at certain angles, it kind of looks very box-like. Kind of as if, because it's a building, like you can actually go into that castle, but you can tell that they've made the building and then built the facade around it.
Yeah.
Whereas this one, it was always designed as a castle from day dot. It is just a facade of a castle. Same with the Paris one, which
They've got the,
I love the story
Cinderella
behind
Royal
that.
Table. That's what, and the Bibbidi Bobbidi Boutique, but those are quite pokey. It looks like they have fit those inside the castle rather than build a castle to try and hide those.
Yeah.
Which that's what the Shanghai one feels like at times.
But and there's also the Dream Suite, which used to be a call center.
Yeah. which one day we're going to get in. We're going to get in there.
Exactly. Michael Eisner, if you're listening to this, which we know you are.
Of course.
Get us in there, even though you have no sway over Disney nowadays. But
I think I'm sure he does. Well, let's be honest. I'm sure he
that's
does.
That's true.
But yeah, so we start at the TTC. You can either catch the monorail or the boat. You go past the two opening day hotels, which are the Contemporary and the Polynesian Village. We'll have to do a hotel episode one day because there's some cool hotels at Walt Disney World. And between the two of us, we've stayed at like five or six of them. Mm. So we've got plenty to talk about. And I think I've explored all of the deluxes just in when I used to live there. Whenever it was busy, like, you know, summer or stuff, and I had a day off, and I still was like, oh, I want to do something Disney, but I don't want to go to the parks at the moment. I would sometimes just go to the hotels and have dinner or something like that.
But even when I was there, I was there for 14 days, but I only had a 10-day pass. So we ended up using two of those days for, like, water parks and Disney Springs and stuff like that. But then there was one day where I just decided to go to the hotels because... Mm. Why not?
It's fun. I like, they're good enough to explore. I think especially a lot of the classic ones like your Polynesian or your Contemporary. And then, you know, newer ones as well, like the Boardwalk and stuff like that. There's a lot of unique stuff that's kind of just to it. I'm not a huge fan of some of the newer hotels they've built, like the Riviera and stuff. But the ones that kind of really go for a theme and stick to that theme are exciting to just walk around.
The Polynesian, like, especially these ones within
the Magic
Ring
Kingdom
are
resort
the best.
Area. Have you ever seen that
the
plot
ring.
That they've tried like five times to build a hotel and just keeps like eating anything they put on it?
The Venetian?
Yeah, so between the TTC and the Contemporary, there's just like a huge plot of land. Apparently they've tried five or six times to build something on it. And because it's Florida, it just eats the building materials. They just sink and disappear to never be seen again.
There's also one plot north of the Contemporary, which is just, that's where they were going to put, I believe it was the
Persian?
Mediterranean,
yeah.
And that was going to be like, you know, Venetian themed and very ironic because it was all going to be like integrated with water, but same problem. They started construction and trying to build things there and it would just sink.
And now, like,
this is swampland.
Yeah. Like, and now, Dom, expected. You'll never believe what's on that plot of land. An executive parking lot.
Oh, wonderful.
Yay. Because the Magic
Chipek
Kingdom,
goes.
Depending on... No, Chipek, there's three parking lots at the Magic Kingdom for cast. Oh, ooh. This is very backstage Carol over here, which this episode
don't
will probably
tell the
turn
secrets.
A bit of backstage Carol. So there's three car parks at Magic Kingdom, depending how what level of cast member you are. If you're just, you know, nothing Billy like me, entry level Samuel, you have to park at right out the back where Disney University is. It's just like a massive parking lot called West Clock. So that was, and you had to catch a bus to get from this parking lot to the tunnels, to the Utilidors, which then you'd walk to your location. And it was the classic thing where it's like, well, you start at 9 o'clock, so you better make sure you're at West Clock by 8:30 so that you can line up to catch the bus to the Utilidors to walk to your location, because I happen to work, like work and clock in on Main Street, which is as far as you can physically go. But then you do get paid what was called walking time, which meant you could clock out a certain amount of minutes early, depending on your location, which was designed that it took into account your travel time, which I believe was calculated as the bus, the time it takes to get the bus to the Utilidor system, plus the slowest cast member they had to walk to your location.
They're just getting, like, bullying aside 100-year-old cast member and just being like, hey, can we borrow you for a minute? We need you to walk this distance. Yeah. And they're just behind them with, like, a stopwatch.
Yeah.
Everyone is like, what are they doing to
take
old
your time,
man,
please,
Greg?
So I get more paid walk time. But then the second, which is kind of for, you know, just your area managers and stuff like that, that is directly across from where Tron Light Cycle Runs is going. It's where that hotel was meant to go. They then catch a bus backstage, and then the top one is actually where, do you remember the Main Street Theater project?
Yes.
That was quietly forgotten about? Yeah, so where the Main Street Theater project was meant to go, I believe it's called MO3. I might be, it's MO something. There's like a car park back there for like 30 cars. So that'll be, you know, the head of the Magic Kingdom that for the day manager, the head of Tomorrowland for the day, like the top X executives, that's where they'll park. And I've heard from a lot of them that the part of the reason that the theater didn't happen was because they were, you know, going, oh, this will never work. This will never work. It's too expensive. It's too this. It's too that. But deep down was because they didn't want to lose their car park.
I'm just like, I'm trying to figure out what the daily job of the head of the Magic Kingdom would be. And I'm just imagining like a Jonah Jameson who's just sitting there in an office, people walking in, there's like 8 telephones from each of the lands. They're all going off and he's picking them up. He's like, what do you mean Space Mountain's down? You get it up and you get it up now. Bring me pictures of Spider-Man.
Nice guy. The guy that did it the most when I was there, super nice guy. Can't remember his name, but yeah. Or super approachable. Any guest issues that the famous, I've told the story, I can't remember what episode it's on, but the famous, the only person above me is Mickey Mouse. That was that guy.
I do love that if you want to just keep on pushing for a manager, they will be more than happy to get someone who will not help you.
Yeah. Especially like if you want to push, even if there's nothing we can do, even if I know there's nothing a manager can do, of course I'm going to still get you a manager. It's Disney service.
Exactly. You've got to give that illusion that you're giving that premium service. But we'll bring it back to the TTC for a bit. So I predominantly use the monorail.
Yeah.
But what? Did you ever use the boats?
Yeah,
I think I've used the boats like once.
I kind of use both. Another top secret, they kind of cut down on this. If I ever went to the Magic Kingdom as a guest, there was a car park at the Contemporary that you could just swipe in with your ID and you could park there and it was like a 2-minute walk to the park. You weren't meant to do that. And I think they cut down, like they stopped people doing that. So I've probably only parked at the TTC like 4 or 5 times in the year that I lived there. Most of the time, yeah, I would catch the monorail. I think I've caught the boat twice. It's a nice leisurely kind of way to get there. And it is cool to see that reveal of the castle from the boat.
Yeah.
And it kind of avoids the fact that the monorails smell a little bit like wee.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's because people are actively weeing in the monorails, but they just have that urine smell. Not
they're
the biggest
old
fan.
Just old. They need to be replaced. But yeah, so you catch the boat, you catch the monorail, you arrive at the station. The monorail's a bit quicker too, so that's always one reason to stop there. Which my favorite thing is, if you're staying at the Contemporary and you want to catch the monorail to the park, you have to catch it all the way around.
Yeah.
So you can just
the
walk
other thing,
quicker.
Like for me, I remember the TTC vividly from when I went to Walt Disney World in 1999. I didn't go there much during my trip because it was just kind of, I was staying on property. Why would I go to the TTC?
Exactly.
You would kind of just use it as a stopover from Epcot to the Magic Kingdom, and vice versa. So I remember this area having like, does it have statues of the characters or like topiaries or something similar to that? Because I remember seeing them, but that might have just been like a Millennium Celebration sort of thing.
It's a very, the TTC still kind of has that Millennium Celebration look to it with the style, you know, that like the pastel-y purple kind of look that's very 1999-2000 Epcot.
Yeah.
It still looks like that.
Yeah. I like that aesthetic though.
Yeah.
It's very much early Walt Disney.
It's very
World.
Disney.
Like it's got
yeah.
this vibe about it. But once you finally get across from the TTC, if you want to get your tickets and transportations and centers, that's where you go. So once you finally get across, you're at the entrance of the Magic Kingdom. Now, at this point, this is all accessible to anyone. You don't actually need a ticket to use the transportation.
Yeah. You might need to, I think you need to pay to park. So if you just want to catch a monorail around, it probably costs you $20. But you can kind of say, if you have, I think, reservations at the hotels, you don't need to pay for parking. If you have reservations for like dining, not 100% sure. That's the way it used to be. But yeah, if you can get to the TTC via Uber or whatever it is, you're free to just explore the Magic Kingdom resort areas. You could easily kill a day, just jump on the monorail, ride it around to the next hotel, jump out at the Polynesian, explore, walk over to the Grand Flow. Like, you could easily kill a day. You can watch the fireworks from the beach, like, just outside of the Polynesian and stuff, and they pipe the music in. You can watch it from
Which
the
I've
balconies
done.
Of the Contemporary, and they pipe the music in over there. Like,
one of the things that I really enjoy about going to Walt Disney World, and I've always mentioned it within the podcast whenever we refer to it, is that it is the all-encompassing Disney experience. Mm. You are just completely surrounded by Disney. And exactly as you said, I have watched the fireworks with the music from the beach near Hoop-Dee-Doo Review. What's that area called? That hotel?
Fort Wilderness.
Fort Wilderness. The Fort Wilderness campgrounds and the hotel. There's like a beach there that overlooks the Magic Kingdom. And you can see the fireworks and they pump the music out through the campsite. It's like if you're around that area, then you get, I wouldn't say the best experience because you don't get to see any of the actual projections or anything like that, but you get an experience still.
Have you ever seen it from the Contemporary?
I haven't, no.
Yeah, so I've watched it from the Contemporary. I kind of went through a phase where I was trying to watch the fireworks from the weirdest places that I could. Contemporary, as high as you can go on the side that's closest to the Magic Kingdom, they have like stairwells that you can get up there. That view is awesome.
Did you just say stairwells?
Stairwells.
I think you said stairwells.
Nah. Check the tape. Yeah, checking. Nah, stairwells.
No, it's stairwells. You definitely said it.
Sorry,
oh, no,
I checked the
stairwell.
Tape.
Got to climb up the stairwells
God,
to get to the
trying
Contemporary.
To get past up those. Have you ever walked up the side of the Contemporary? It's a pretty big walk. So if there's a whale in the way, you good luck getting through.
Look, after I've eaten some of the meals at the Magic Kingdom, I feel like a stair whale.
If you ever go to Chef Mickey's, all you can eat there, you'll feel like a stair whale. But you
anyway,
because you can see the projections from there. The best space I've ever watched the fireworks, and we may as well enter the park because it's right as you enter, is from the top of the Town Square Theater, which is where you can meet Mickey and stuff like that. If you're a cast member, there's a walkway that you can just kind of stand up there and watch the fireworks. And it is a spectacular view because you're just high enough up, you can see over all the buildings straight to the castle.
That's cool.
Yeah.
There's, like, I've gotten to, you know, one of my experiences with backstage, and you're going to be pretty jealous because I know that you worked at Walt Disney World, but yeah, I got the special treatment. I got to go on the street behind Main Street.
Oh, the bypass?
Yeah, the Main Street
which one?
Bypass.
There's the normal bypass, which as you enter is on the right-hand side. That's open every day, but there's a rare bypass. That's
it was on
the
right-hand
left-hand
side.
Oh, so the left-hand bypass, only open on the busiest days of the year, because that is pretty much the area, the backstage area where I lived most of the time. That's where all the parades would be staged. Like, that's where we would walk to get, you know, to Adventureland or to the west side. We'd walk around there. But occasionally, they will open that area as well. So it enters, you know where the Crystal Palace is? There's that little fountain area?
Yeah.
There's a way you could walk straight through that, and it will take you out right next to guest relations.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I did not know that. Mm. That'd sort of be around where they take the sort of the Main Street vehicles, wouldn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
so it takes you out between what's called the car barn, which is where the horses are, the trolley is, stuff like that, and that big gate there between the car barn and guest relations.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I remember one of the cool things now when you actually hit the entrance of Walt Disney World is because they've got the magic bands, it is just an experience of tap on and you're in. You don't have to really wait in too many long lines. However, I will mention that since we went there, so in 2015, security was, it was fairly basic. Then when I went back in 2019, every day, every person, everything had to be checked.
Bag check.
So you had to go through the metal detectors as well. Mm. And you would have to have your bag checked, and they would go through various sort of different checks and that. It was pretty full on. I will say my trip.
So when you were there, because they've changed it again recently, probably not because you guys were coming off the bus, but no one else gets. So security used to be the entrance of the Magic Kingdom. Everyone would go through that security no matter where they were coming from. Now they have security back at the transportation and ticketing center and at the hotels. So the only people going through security at the front gates to the Magic Kingdom are the ones coming through the bus system. So now they've actually separated that, which is, I feel, is cool. And they've brought in those new walkthrough scanners where you just have everything. You just walk through and it just tells you like, oh yeah, in your bags, X, Y, and Z.
Jeez.
Yeah, there's no bag check. Like, the bag check is done by a system now that you literally just hold your bag, walk through, and it'll go like, good, you got this, you got that sort of thing.
It's very full on. Like, there were days where you would wake up, you were heading to the Magic Kingdom, a couple of buses would rock up, and you were waiting in line for a solid 20, 30 minutes to push everyone through. And I will say that as an international as well, this whole sort of theatrics of security was concerning as an international, because I'm like, what are they looking for? Like,
well,
this is
I've
very
heard some
intense.
Stories. Not heard some stories. I know of some stories that I probably can't even talk about of stuff that's being caught at security. So I know it's that, you know, might be a little bit of, this feels weird, but I can guarantee you that security at the front of the park has caught things that would be dangerous to you inside the park.
Yeah.
Including
I completely understand
a baby tiger. But anyway.
there were some interesting stories that you've told me. We won't tell them on the podcast.
Yeah, there's
don't
some
get
stuff I,
in
like,
trouble.
I kind of probably already toe the line of what I should and shouldn't talk about. But there's stuff that I can't talk about, essentially. Who knows? In the future, I might work for Disney in some regard. And if they go through some of the stuff I could tell here, I would never get hired again. Not, you know, stuff that's bad for Disney, but just bad stuff the guests did, generally.
Yeah. But it's, I completely understand why it's there. It's the same reason why it's there on aeroplanes and all of that. But it's
place,
just...
Have you ever had any... So the only place I can think of in Australia that's a tourist activity that has that style of scanner, bag check, stuff like that, is Sydney Tower, randomly.
Mm.
But that's it. I can't think
I haven't
of...
been in a very long time. Mm. But when we go to Movie World, it's literally just, got anything in the bag? No. Thanks.
And that's the most you'll ever get. Most of the time, they just let you walk through.
If it's after the rush during the day, they'll literally just have one person there and a security guard, and they'll just let you through. Like, there is... It is just that difference of we just walk into a theme park compared to in the US where it's like a whole thing. But It's completely fine. I get why it's there. It's just spooky as someone who's an international.
It's the differentness, which I do like now that they've separated that. It is a shame they couldn't have, I guess, you're not going to put, you know, at every single hotel security so that everyone clearing the buses once they hit the Magic Kingdom was free to go. But I do like how most people don't have to go through them right at the entrance, because exactly that. Half the time, the turnstiles, now that they're using the Magic Band system, were completely empty. But you're still in a 15-minute wait to get your bag checked because you had, you know, 3 pins and a water bottle in it.
Have we even gotten up to Main Street yet?
We haven't even entered the park yet.
Okay. So let's enter. Got our magic bands on. We're
going
to
scan your fingerprint.
Oh, no, sorry. Your fingerprint's red. You now have to talk to a customer service representative for an hour.
Which I've got a friend who works there, and he's like at main entrance. He's like, the best thing is, if you ever have any issues, you just get guest relations to sort it. It's like the least resistance you'll ever get as a cast member, because as soon as it becomes the tiniest issue, it's not your problem anymore.
I've seen there's a thing, and like with the way that the magic bands work, because basically what happens is if you have any problems with your magic band, sometimes it scans up as blue, which means there's a problem. Like, they don't come up as red. I think it's only when you scan your thumb that it can come up as red, and that's just like it's wrong. But if it comes up as blue, that means you need to talk to guest relations, and usually then they'll be like, oh, you don't have a ticket or you don't have a reservation for this day, yada, yada. I've heard that it's that thing where they have the final say. So it can be that thing where if it's like there's a weird discrepancy and say for some reason you've, as a group of 30, bought 10 tickets and there's one person who's got 9, they'll just kind of be like, eh, 10, just 10, let them in.
Which it can be. So that's the same with the obviously not anymore, but the same with the FastPass system. So if you worked FastPass and someone would scan a band, it would come up blue or whatever it was. You had the ability to overwrite that. Because, you know, the system isn't perfect. Something could go wrong. It could be that, you know, as you've said, the party's all for some reason under one name, and or maybe 9 people have a park reservation and just one kid who's 4 years old doesn't have one for that day for some reason. They could override those sort of things. But yeah, we'll walk through. You got to walk through the famous plaque. Here you leave today. Enter.
The Bob Chapek's world of iridescent.
You enter Bob Chapek's kingdom. $50,
I hope you
please.
Got your wallets on you.
Money,
as you
please.
Walk under the train station,
there's another turnstile.
They're like, and like all your jewelry, your watches, your wallet just up into this machine. And then it spits out a number. That's the value of everything you had on you. And that's, you're allowed to then spend your Chapek points. Let's make a pact that's all we'll talk about for Chapek until our final sign off. How's that sound?
Which we're hitting a good land. So I think we've got plenty to talk about. Chapek hasn't touched Main Street USA, so we're good. Because that is the main entrance of this park, as pretty much every Magic Kingdom park in the world, except for Shanghai. Main Street USA is your, you know, turn of the century, 1899, 1901 Main Street in, you know, small town America. And I probably biased because I've spent so much time here, but I love Main Street USA. And the Magic Kingdom's one of the best ones in the world.
Oh, can I say something controversial?
Uh-oh.
So for me, I love Main Street USA as well. I love the atmosphere. I love the vibe that's going on there. I just feel this one is way too busy to chill out in. It's like there's always things going on.
Of the world's busiest theme park, literally.
Well, yeah, that makes sense. And this is literally the only way to get in and out of the theme park. But I guess from my experiences with Hong Kong Disneyland, you could just sometimes go in there, sit on a bench, and there would be like no one around. It's like, everyone would come in at the start of the day. They'd leave at the end of the day. Main Street would just sit there and exist for the other bits of the day. So you could
hang out and just enjoy it. Yeah. I feel a lot of people kind of, because Magic Kingdom and Main Street in Walt Disney World in general is such a vacation place. You've got those people who are willing to go an hour before opening. You've got the people who are sleeping in. You've got the people who are going just for the night.
Yeah.
It's constantly busy. There's no like peak, you know, you've got, sure, Rope Drop's going to be busy, but when on average you've got, I think it works out to 55 to 60,000 a day on average in the Magic Kingdom, there's pretty much always going to be someone in the middle of Main Street blocking your way.
It's like, that's a lot of people, 50,000 to 60,000. Like, if you think of a stadium, like a stadium, what's the capacity of a stadium? Like 20, 25,000?
It depends. So like Stadium Australia can seat, the one in the main stadium in Sydney can seat like 80,000.
Could you imagine that stadium,
full concert mode,
filling up with people, like every seat being booked out every single day?
Yeah.
And then just
having
those
people an average. So
go around. Like,
a 50,000 day is what, you know, it's getting busy at the Magic Kingdom. You would have days of, you know, 20 to 30,000 and they'd feel quite empty, which is wild to think that 20,000 people can feel like nothing in a theme park comparatively. Mm. But then you'd also have the days that would even out that ratio that had 100,000+ people in the park. You know, your 4th of July, your New Year's Eve, days like that. And those are the days you'd feel the crunch on Main Street.
Yeah. The other thing, I guess, from a similar perspective, being Australian theme park goers, Movie World had a news article a couple of years ago, I think it was 2019, where it was like Boxing Day was their busiest day ever, and it was something like 14,000 people.
Yeah.
I think that was the biggest day.
I think it was for the opening of DC Rivals. It was around the opening of DC Rivals. And yeah, they were like, a world record attendance break. 13,560 people, something like that. Which, if you ever had that many people in the Magic Kingdom, you wouldn't see people. You could walk through entire lands and not see anyone.
It'd be like, where is everyone? Like when you look at some of these attractions, Space Mountain could comfortably sit 5,000 people.
Yeah, in the queue. Even things like the Tomorrowland Transit Authority, the People Mover, can do 3,500 guests an hour capacity. Yeah. So, like,
that's a lot.
Absolute eaters of people in this park that at full capacity can just have thousands of people in the queues / on the rides at any time.
But you know what doesn't have any attractions? Main Street USA.
Except that you can ride the vehicles. That's, or the trolley.
Oh, true.
That's it.
And you can meet Mickey.
Yeah,
and complain at City Hall.
The best attraction. This used to be probably one of the coolest Mickeys in the world. Not anymore, sadly, but it used to be the talking Mickey. Interactive Mickey. Which
this
we talked
part
about
of the Living Characters
a little,
Initiative.
Yeah, Living Character Initiative. But I always thought this was the best Mickey to meet. Sure, he was in kind of a generic Mickey costume. And as an adult, you know that you weren't really having a conversation. You're kind of following
what?
A script. But I still thought it was an amazing piece of technology.
It was one of those cool things where, like, if you were a kid, this would have blown your mind. But it was that sort of thing where when you were talking to Mickey, he would have these very specific lines that he could say.
Yeah.
So oftentimes the conversation would be very similar, in which the cast member would sort of say, like, oh, you're going to meet Mickey. Tell them about what you've done. Oh, hey, Mickey, we just had dinner. Oh! I'm starving.
Yeah.
I could go for a Bob Chapek popsicle.
Oh, you said it.
I broke the seal.
Yeah, and I thought it was really cool. You can also meet Tinkerbell in Main Street for some reason. And there is a Tony's Town Square Italian restaurant, which is based off the dog movie, Lady and the Tramp.
The dog movie.
One of the Disney dog movies.
There's
I never ate there. I've heard it's literally the definition of okay Italian food, like you'd expect at, you know, Olive Garden or something like that.
Yeah. I find that a lot of, like, outside of Epcot, if anything says that it's like, oh, Chinese food or Asian fusion somewhere around the park, it's probably like the bare minimum is what's possible is that sort of food. Like
I would say
Italian
like,
food, it's spaghetti and meatballs.
The tier list for food at the Walt Disney World is Epcot's at number one. And then the rest, it's probably like Animal Kingdom, the equivalent of number seven. And then Hollywood Studios at Magic Kingdom at 38. Like, that's the
Magic Kingdom has the worst food. I hate eating at this park.
Yeah, I would say it's the worst.
You have to get a reservation for anything good, but good luck getting a reservation
for anything good.
But
there's not really
anything good
anyway. Be Our Guest is worth about a third what they charge now that they charge the price fixed menu. And more than half of that money, I'm sure, is going to the fact that it's really cool to eat there.
Yeah. Like, it's also like, so we'll get into it a little bit later, but Fantasyland, at Hong Kong Disneyland, Fantasyland is where they put a lot of their sort of traditional Asian cuisine. Mm. So you would go there and you would get amazing dumplings and what you would expect when you go around Hong Kong. You go to Fantasyland in the Magic Kingdom, and for some reason there's some Bavarian-style restaurant selling tater tots. Like, what?
Looking just, out over small world while you eat.
Like, it doesn't make any sense, but I don't know. It's that thing where it's like, I want some variety.
Yeah.
Magic Kingdom has no variety in what you can get. It's all fast, deep-fried, covered in cheese sauce and bacon.
Yeah, so even if we look at the Main Street USA dining options, we've got Tony's Town Square, which we just talked about. We've got the bakery, which is just a Starbucks, well-themed Starbucks, essentially. We've got the Plaza restaurant, which is a sit-down restaurant, but it's so small, you can pretty much never get a reservation there. It seats like 50 people or something per.
Oh, wow.
It might be slightly bigger than that, but that's genuinely what it feels like. And then you've got the Crystal Palace, which is on the left-hand side as you hit the hub, which is a character dining buffet where you can meet Winnie the Pooh and friends.
Oh, yeah.
And then, of course, you've got the only place I think I legitimately, other than the Starbucks, the only place I've ever eaten on Main Street, Casey's Corner, which is hot dogs and fries. Like, the most cliche American theme park food. And it's one of the first restaurants you hit in the park.
Yeah, I will say I like Casey's Corner. Because I think that the hot dogs, American hot dogs are very different to Australian hot dogs.
Like
They're more meaty. The Australian hot dogs are those red ones that look like someone's gotten meat and pureed it and then cooked it. It's not okay.
Yeah.
They're delicious, but when you actually think that that's meat, you're like,
Don't think about it. That's the secret.
Hoofs and eyelids. Yum, yum.
The like loaded hot dogs I had there for a while. They had like pulled pork hot dog, which had like pulled pork and slaw on the top. That was really good.
Law.
Slaw.
Coleslaw? Slaw. Sorry.
Turn your ears on today. Hello, wake up. McFly.
I thought you said Lord. Like the singer. There's pulled pork and the singer Lord just comes out.
She serenades you. She's fallen. How the mighty have fallen. She was at the Met Gala last week. This week she's singing at Casey's Corner.
Hanging out at Casey's Corner.
Which they do at Casey's. They have the little piano man, little Jim.
Yes, who
Jim's
has a
the
mirror.
Guy who's usually there. A legacy cast member. He's worked there for quite a long time. And always great to just chill, eat your hot dog, listen to Jim, play some little songs. He also takes Disney, pretty much you could throw any Disney song at him and he knows how to play it. Like he takes requests. So
no,
give him a chance.
Don't say that because once I went to Jelly Rolls and they're like, oh, challengers, give us any song. We'll take it on. So I put on a napkin with $5. I was like, Space Mountain theme song from California Disneyland. I could see the piano player opened up the request, scrunched up his face and gave this look like, huh? And then took the money, put the money in the tip jar, scrunched up the napkin and threw it over his shoulder.
That's what I think it
is. So they don't play every song, Luke.
Well, yeah, because that's the other, that's literally the other side of America. What do you expect?
Then play Stereo Sonic Sound from this space mountain. Wow.
I would love to a guy at Jelly Rolls to just have done that. Like,
I have seen people play the Space Mountain theme on a piano. And that whole start, like, if you can get someone who's good at doing it, imagine, like, the... It's very cool. But, look it up on YouTube. There are a couple of people who do it, and highly commendable. There's also another guy who does, like, a drums cover of it. It's very cool. Huh. So it's they're just, like, playing the drums to it, but it's, like, this mad, really sort of hardcore... rock version of
the most
Space
hardcore
Mountain.
Disney song, Space Mountain. But yeah, Hell Main Street is literally what you expect from an entrance land to a theme park. It's a well themed entrance land, but it's literally dining, like last minute quick dining mostly. There is those two sit downs, but it is kind of grab and go for, you know, Casey's or the bakery, and then shopping. You've got two sides of the street. On the left-hand side is the Emporium, which literally runs the entire length of the street. You can walk us through a store, never leaving it, while just walking through.
I've randomly remembered that going through Main Street, there's, like, as you were saying, the whole left-hand side is just the Emporium. It's gigantic. And on the outside, I saw that they were selling these really cool Disney vans. Like, not trucks. They're not selling trucks. Hey, where can I get one of those Mickey vans? What were they called? The
van
Uber
shoes?
Equivalent that they wanted
the
for
what?
A while?
Minivans?
Minivans, yeah. That's it. Completely different thing. These were Mickey Mouse van shoes.
Oh, that's
and I was like,
cool.
I want that. I went into someone. I'm like, oh, where can I get the Mickey van shoes? And like, sorry, they're for women. And then she left. I was like, oh, cool.
That's not how Vans are like the most unisex shoe of all time. Vans and Converse are literally every shoe is unisex.
AK, to be fair.
The cast member probably went, we don't have any men's sizes. I can't be bothered looking for them.
I eventually found one and it was like a size 6 in women's. And it would have literally gone up to like halfway on my foot. Like, I don't have a huge foot for a dude. And mine's sort of like half. Yeah, I'm size 9. I can probably fit like a size 12 in women's.
11. I think it's 2. Yeah, add 2. Yeah.
2. Okay. So if
which
anyone
is still pretty
finds
big for
those,
a woman, I think. Minivans. Oh my gosh. Mickey vans. Well, Dom will also take a truck. With just a Mickey sticker slapped on the side. Either of those, he'll be happy to take. But yeah, that's
you can
kind
hit
of the,
me up.
The left-hand side's like themed to multiple shops, but they're all connected. Yeah. So there is, you know, oh, at this store you can get, you know, jewelry or whatever it is. At this store it's more T-shirts, but they're all connected. The right-hand side is more separated and has more unique stuff. On the corner it has the confectionery, which has some just treats, another grab-and-go option, essentially, where it's, you know, everything that will hurt your teeth. So candy apples, Rice Krispie treats, fudge, that sort of stuff. My favorite, I really like the, you can get Mickey-shaped Rice Krispie treats with M&Ms on the top. I used to have
I've seen those,
I used to have a mate who worked at the confectionery, one of my housemates. And at the end of the day, they were just given free rein to take home any food that was going to be thrown out. So I've probably eaten more than my weight in those Mickey Rice Krispie treats.
See, I've always heard that thing. I got suckered in to the illusion. Like, you know how you hear those things where it's like, oh, if you stand by the confectionery window when they're making like the apples or anything like that, and you see videos of it, like it happens to the Tim Trackers all the time, where they'll just like lean over and hand you one of the apples, or they'll hand you a Rice Krispie treat, and it's like, oh, a magical moment. Here's me with my just married bag, my huge load of pins, my Mickey ears, just like staring at them whilst they're cooking. Like,
anything
yeah, you
for
can
me?
Give me
anything
one of those?
For me?
tap in the badge, like,
You see this? You see this?
To be fair, if I was probably a young child, I probably would get one. Not somebody who looks like that they've amassed a wealth of Disney fortune.
You've had enough Disney stuff in your life, clearly.
Exactly.
Next to the confectionery, used to be, it's not this anymore, sadly, used to be my favorite store, The Art of Disney, aka the store my wallet would walk into and cry. This was like figurines, the artworks, the more, you know, if you don't have at least $1,000 in your pocket, you probably can't buy anything except for a printout of what a painting would look like. Yeah. But I always used to love this store. I can see stuff in my peripheral vision here that is from the Main Street cinema.
Yeah, it's one of those sort of, like, I would say it's more up class. Well, not up class. It's just more expensive.
It's more
Disney
art, more
gifts.
It's kind of a misnomer, I guess, but a more tasteful Disney stuff, which kind of doesn't really work.
But there's no plushes or anything like that. It's like limited edition Disney
figurines, collectible coins, and, you know, artworks, original, some original artworks, some, you know, printed artworks, stuff like that. It's now being reworked into the retro collection for the 50th. So this is kind of a looking like, you know, merchandise as it looked in 1971 seems to be what they're going for. Which sounds really cool to me. I'm excited to, if the borders ever reopen we've got 18 months. So I'm sure in the next 18 months, I'll be at the Magic Kingdom for the 50th anniversary. I'm hearing the Tron and Guardians might not open till kind of this time next year. So how hard it is to get there from Australia, I'll probably wait till the last few months of the celebration so I can actually see everything.
Well, that's the thing I'm hearing is that Disney has been like, you have to come to the 50th. The 50th is going to be amazing. You need to come and experience everything, and you have to be there this year. But at the same time, it's that thing where when you look at it, it's like, why would I go now? Tron Light Cycle's not open. Guardians of the Galaxy isn't open. They can perfect all of the shows and make them better. Pretty much,
what
like
show?
If you
Kite
go,
Tales?
Well, we're getting a new show on Main Street that's called something like Magic Mickey's
Enchantment
Celebration
or something. I bet it's got Enchantment, Wish, Magic somewhere in the title.
Dream, Happy, just spin the wheel. So why wouldn't you go at the end?
Yeah,
that's what I'm saying.
I'm here, that kind of, you know, Guardians is aiming. Obviously, this is all internal rumors that's spreading around. Guardians of the Galaxy is aiming for the 40th anniversary of Epcot, which will be October 1st, 2022. And then Tron wouldn't surprise me, looking at how it's going. It wouldn't surprise me if Tron was, say, spring/summer of next year, kind of 6 months into the celebration, something new. And then 6 months in again, open Guardians of the Galaxy. And then you got the final 6 months of the celebration after that. That would be my way to do it. Obviously, with delays and stuff like that, who knows if that's what they could hit. But in my mind, that's what I guess they'd be going for.
To put it into perspective of how long Tron has been under construction, when I went to Walt Disney World, the land was cleared and they were starting to put in the pylons. That was in early 2019. There was some figure the other day I heard that Tron, in the time that Tron Light Cycle has been under construction, they were able to build the entire original iteration of Walt Disney World. The hotels, the Polynesian, the contemporary, all of the amenities required for the Magic Kingdom, the Utilidors. Everything was built in less time than Tron Light Cycle, an attraction which already exists elsewhere in the world. Why is it taking so long? Is there any reason?
Beyond
pandemic, which seems to be the
so from
big
what
excuse.
I've heard, it was all of this was designed to be, you know, open straight away as part of the 50th. So in the lead up to the 50th, you know, Ratatouille was meant to open like a year ago. And then Tron was meant to open around now with Guardians of a very similar time. From what I've heard, Guardians is kind of held back because they haven't filmed the portions with the actors still. And obviously those can't be filmed, well, couldn't be filmed for like the last year because of the pandemic. Guardians of the Galaxy 3 and the Guardians of the Galaxy Holiday Special were both pushed back filming-wise because of the pandemic. Yeah. So in that case, fair enough. It's, you know, you can't do much in that regard. Tron, on the other hand, who knows? Because, yeah, as you're saying, it took 4.5 years from groundbreaking to the opening of the Magic Kingdom. Tron Light Cycle Power Runs was announced in 2017 at D23, 4 years ago, and is looking like it won't open for at least another 6 months. So it's going to take the same time to build Tron Light Cycle Power Runs, literally a copy of a ride from somewhere else in the world, as the entire Magic Kingdom.
I've heard that thing where it was, they knew that it was going to take a long time and they started funneling resources into other things leading up to the 50th. Like they're like, just take the construction people and spread them out amongst Walt Disney World to get everything else ready. And now they're starting to really ramp up construction again. But it is that thing where so many times I have to be reminded that that's coming, even though it has been coming for 4 years.
Yeah, like, surprise, it's still coming, guys. And, like, you'll see every few weeks on the blogs, they'll be like, progress at Tron Light Cycle Power Runs. It'll be they've put, like, one new piece of metal up, and then they've nothing will it. Happen for another 3 weeks.
Where they'll change the wall.
Yeah. But let's we'll talk about the hub, and then I think we'll have time. We've managed to do one whole episode on Main Street. But
yay!
The last part of the Magic...
and the TTC.
Oh, the TTC.
Which is a vital part of the Walt Disney World experience.
But the hub, I love the hub at this park. It's kind of not as cool as it used to be, where there was a lot more trees and stuff like that. As you hit the hub now, you've got on your left and right the gardens, which are unfortunately mostly used for upcharge experiences. Yep. But occasionally, you like, so that when I worked there, those were actually built for FastPass. So for a while, it didn't last for too long. Pretty much lasted the year I was there, and that was it. The gardens and the area around the flagpole at Main Street USA were the fast pass areas for the fireworks and the parades.
Yeah.
And those were great viewing areas. Now, occasionally, you can just get into those gardens at any point. So it's a good place to watch the fireworks because remember, that essentially used to be a fast pass exclusive area. So, of course, it's going to be good. Still, in my opinion, the best place to watch the fireworks is what we used to call in the biz, in the Main Street biz, the top of the box.
Ooh, so, the top of the box. Tell me about the top of the box.
The top of the box. At the end of Main Street.
Did you know at the end of...
there is the box. So you know at the top of Main Street where it turns into the circle, the hub, the road circle? Right there, there's a crossing. At that circle, you go down the straightaway and then there's a walkway that goes between two sides of the road. What they do is they put up a piece of tape blocking so that that walkway will stay open during the fireworks. The best spot to watch the fireworks is get your feet right on that tape. Because that's a walkway, it means no person who's the world's tallest person isn't going to stand in front of you 1 minute before the fireworks start. You're not going to be asked to fill in and condense all the space because you're right at the front of that viewing area. You can essentially wait and see because that tape doesn't always go down straight away. It's slightly different now, but when we used to do it, because the parade would go first, I would always tell people just follow the parade and stop right there. Now, obviously, you can't. I'm not sure what. You know, it's going to be busier again when they debut the new show, obviously. So try and see if you can get there, you know, if you can. Because, yeah, that's great spot to watch, perfect distance away that you can see the projections and the fireworks in one.
Yeah. I really liked those little garden viewing areas. No one ever used them because no one was like, hey, I'm going to use a Fastpass to see the fireworks, literally something that is broadcast throughout the entire theme park.
Oh, my favorite trip. So when I used to work there, we had two night parades. Generally, they were at 9 and 11. So, and then the fireworks were at 10. We used to do Fastpass for the second night parade, the 11 p.m. parade, which meant, you know, those three Fastpasses you get, and once you use them, you can rebook some more? Well, you can't, because your third Fastpass was at 11 p.m. But the 11 p.m. parade, that's pretty late. So the Fastpass area was often fuller, and you'd have to be standing in the second row when you could just walk straight across the street 5 minutes before the start of the parade and get a front row view without wasting your Fastpass.
I also remember that there was a lovely person who was working the Fastpass section of Wishes, and we won't mention any names, and nothing was ever coerced, but you're walking past, it was you and me. You were working at the time, and I was just like, I came over and said hello, and then one of your friends who was working Fastpass looked over and was like, oh, is that your friend, Luke? And you're like, oh, yes, this is my friend. No one said anything, but she was like, oh, beep, boop, beep, looks like they've got a Fastpass on here. Oh, and so I got to go into the Fastpass viewing, and I didn't say anything. Luke didn't say anything. This indiscriminate person.
Apparently. We didn't know how it ended up there. That was always the working on Main Street. You get the little sneaks. There was a friend came one time. It was their birthday. We got in the VIP viewing area for the parade, which is like, you know, the part where I saw George Lucas, the part where I saw Chris Evans watching the parade. So that's the premium view. Like, there's a lot. If you kind of know a CM, there's some magic that can be made for you, but like, there's magic like that that can be made to anyone. So that VIP viewing area, there's times when I could see it was empty and I would make magic for, you know, a kid. Just go get their family in the viewing area if they're looking at the last minute. That was the good thing about Disney. Like, there was a lot that if you were willing to put in, you know, if you were willing to go out of your way to make that magic, you're given pretty much free reign. I don't know if it's still the case, but there was a lot that you as an individual entry-level cast member had the permission, without asking anyone else to do, to make magic for guests. Like, you could, you know, there was times when working down in Fastpass in the area, a kid was just, you know, hanging out. You could go get a plush for them, give that to them. You could buy them ice cream. You could buy their family. Those sort of things were, you know, those are also the memories that I still remember. I've spent thousands of hours on this street. Like, at the end of the day, Main Street USA, I've spent thousands of hours. I used to work 10-hour shifts, 4 to 5 days a week. I've, you know, for 54 weeks. I've spent a lot of time, and the memories that I have are either the funny ones or the times when you make magic to guests. And then my favorite memories happened all the time. I used to love working down near the flagpole. You would watch, didn't matter if it was a 4-year-old kid or a 40-year-old woman or an 80-year-old person, you know, rounding that corner and getting that first glimpse of the castle, people will cry, people will cheer, people will just, you know, they essentially get teleported back to that 6-7-year-old child.
Yeah.
Where magic's real, fantasy's real. At the end of the day, you know, sure, we can complain all we want about money, how expensive stuff is like that. But those moments of magic that I, you know, I've watched tens of thousands of guests experience, those are the things that are going to stick with me.
Yeah, that's the thing with Disney and especially the Magic Kingdom. A lot of people will use the Magic Kingdom as their first park of the trip. And so when they go through that turnstile and they see the castle, that's it. They're at Disney. This is real. This is something that me and my wife did. Like, literally 24 hours after we got married, we were at the Magic Kingdom looking at the castle. And that was really cool. Like, to be fair, don't remember too much of that day. I remember falling asleep on the monorail.
Yeah, that sounds like the post 24 hours of travel that's required to get to Orlando.
We both fell asleep on Spaceship Earth as well. Good opportunity for it. It was a 14
minute. I wish they
brought
back the, you know, Ellen's sleeping adventure.
Well, at this stage, our room wasn't ready. So I was like, well, we may as well just go to the parks.
Did you have one of those things where it's like, we've got a 2-week ticket and we're only here for 12 days. So we can literally go to the park every day. If we go for an hour, who cares?
We had a 10-day ticket for our 10 days that we were there. But I think we always just bought the additional day, pretty much just being like, well,
it was like $10 at that point, right? Like,
yeah.
That thing where it's as soon as you get above 6, 7, or 8, I can't remember exactly what it is, but it's designed to keep you on site, obviously, but it's stupidly cheap to add an extra day, 2 or 3.
The good thing about that, the way that we did it is we got to Orlando super early in the morning and then just smashed out the parks. And because we did that, we really didn't have that much jet lag the next day because we just pushed through.
Mm.
Like, we just didn't allow ourselves to fall into the sort of rut of, oh, okay, well, we went to bed at 3 p.m. and now I'm really awake at 4 a.m. in the morning.
Yeah. Oh, good old jet lagging, because you usually only travel for like 2 weeks at a time just as you start to get over it. Oh, time to go home and get it the other way again.
And it's always worse on the way back.
And especially because I often do that thing where I was like, I'm going to make the most of my holiday. I'm going back to work the day after I get home.
Oh, no.
I regret it every time. But hey, that's one
extra
day.
You need a holiday for your holiday.
In Orlando.
Well, I think we can wrap it up there. We've still got a lot to talk about in the Magic Kingdom. But I think we'll come back next week where we can either go to Adventureland or we can go to Tomorrowland.
It's
going to
be that classic thing. Do you start? That's a big question. Let us know on Twitter. Let us know. Do you start at the Magic Kingdom going left to Adventureland or right to Tomorrowland? And whichever we get the most comments about, that's what way we will go next week.
All right. Well, I think that wraps it up for here. Is there anything that you want to talk about for the TTC, the entrance of Main Street USA?
I think I've said it all. It's a place I've worked for countless hours. I love Main Street. It's always going to be my home away from home on that little random 1899 turn of the century Main Street. I don't have much else to say. We've said a lot. So hopefully you enjoyed. If hopefully it doesn't take us an episode for every land, or this will be the entirety of October. Happy 50th birthday. Nope, that's next week. I'll wish you a happy birthday next week, Magic Kingdom.
All right, well, that wraps it up for this week's episode of Review Time's Theme Podcast. You can catch me at Review Time Dumb on Twitter.
You can catch me at Review Time Luke on Twitter.
Hey, Luke, we've got like 2 minutes left.
I'm asleep.
And you can catch us both at Time Review and Review Time everywhere else. Well, it's Time Review on Twitter, Review Time everywhere else. That's probably very confusing, but you get it. Next week, we'll be back with more of Walt Disney World's Magic Kingdom. Until then, definitely get into contact with us and let us know your thoughts about this week's episode or anything that you want to talk to us about. We got a really cool email from someone earlier today, just before we started the theme park cast, who was letting us know about their experiences with Superstar Limo from last week. So they were talking a lot about things that we didn't even know, that Drew Carey was apparently the host of the, what was it?
The Food and Bakery Tour, was it?
Yeah, the Bakery Tour. Which we had no idea. It was basically saying that, like, Whoopi and Drew Carey were not big characters at this time. They're like, this is the best that Disney can do.
Well, that was Drew was the Drew Carey show, right? Like, around that era, which they must have just had him on contract because he's also at the Sounds Dangerous with Drew Carey. It must have just literally, his contract must have had a stipulation he didn't read carefully that was like, oh, we can use it for your only theme park rides. We had to pay you $2.50.
Also, Joan Rivers was appropriately chosen as the MC of the event since she regularly worked the microphone on the red carpet during the Oscars. And they said, they pointed out specifically that she spoke with a harsh Brooklyn, New York accent, which I did.
So you joined me. Goodness gracious.
Thank you very much, Mark, for sending that in. It was a great read to go through and hear that feedback for that episode. So if you want to get into contact with us, definitely hit us up. But we will see you back here next week for Review Time's Theme Podcast. See ya! Review Time's Theme Podcast is brought to you by Luke Carroll and Dom Lacey. A big shout out goes to our newest patron, Rowan26, long-term patron, Jordan, and to you, the listener. Review Time's Theme Podcast will be back next week.